Welcome back, everyone, to the channel. Tonight's terrifying story is about a group of college friends who all get together at Spruce Ridge in Colorado to rent out this cabin by a ski resort for New Year's Eve. Once they arrive, they notice that they are not alone in these woods and that something or someone is stalking them. When one of them gets attacked, that's when things start to go horribly wrong. Now let's get spooky. When I was a sophomore in college, my friends and I went on a ski trip over Christmas break. I'm not sure if ski lodges and ski lodge parties are popular anymore, but they were a thing when I was younger. That was back in the 80s. But after 1989, ski lodges were never the same for me and several others. The first thing that comes to mind about that weekend isn't death, fear, or even sadness. It's cold. It was bitterly cold that weekend. So cold, it was like the ice sliced through the air and attacked every inch of flesh it could, just like a knife will. But no matter what came after, nothing will ever ruin that view of the mountains. The majestic stone ridges, plush white mounds of snow, and the velvet green pines were stunning to see. They were a dangerous place long before we even got there. No telling how many lives had been lost over the centuries on those cliffs. By that standard, what happened to us was just another little footnote. We all arrived a few days after Christmas on December 29th. After spending Christmas with our respective families across the country, we made plans months in advance for this little vacation. I was beyond excited for it. We all were. Our group was spending the days leading up to the New Year's Eve at Spruce Ridge in Colorado. Justin's parents had chipped in for our weekend as a Christmas/birthday gift, since Justin's birthday was December 27th. The cabin we were staying at had been in their family for decades. While there was technically a ski lodge about 10 minutes away or so, the place was more like an exclusive getaway since the cabins were so far away from each other. While I arrived via plane from Cincinnati, my best friend Jill Conroy had arrived earlier from Tampa. Justin, who was Jill's boyfriend, came by the way of Minneapolis, and his roommate Peter was coming in from Charleston with his girlfriend Yvonne. But the person I was most eager to see was Charlie Hightower, the guy I had a crush on since I first laid eyes on him in Psych 101. He arrived from Indianapolis about the same time as me, and I had just picked up my baggage when I laid eyes on that handsome athlete with deep hazel eyes and a superb jawline. "Hey, Trisha," he greeted me with a smile. "Hope you had a good Christmas. Can I help you with your luggage?" "Thanks, it was nice. I've always loved Christmas. Hope yours was good too. And I got it all pretty much taken care of except for this one bag." I gestured to the small tote. "Could you grab it for me?"
"Sure thing," he said without hesitation.
"Shall we share a cab? We'd sure save money that way." I felt a rush of excitement at the prospect of time alone with Charlie. "Then on our way it is." We walked out of the terminal and found a cab to take us to the cabin. On the drive out of the airport, we talked about our respective Christmases until we fell into a comfortable silence.
"I can't believe the 80s are coming to an end," he said eventually.
"I know what you mean. Not just a new year, a new decade, a whole new ballgame." It was a surreal thought. My friends and I had all grown up and come of age in the 80s. I had some fleeting memories of the 70s, but the 80s were the only decade we really knew.
The 80s weren't just a decade, it was an attitude. Like an item of clothing that seemed to become a part of you. Pac-Man, MTV, Ghostbusters, Miami Vice, and Star Wars were all milestones to us. Some people loved to poke fun at the fashion back then, but I wouldn't change it for anything, especially considering some of the trends that have came and gone since. It was a great ride, wasn't it? I smiled at him, a grin he returned. Yes, it was. At that moment, I noticed we had arrived at the cabin. But calling the building a cabin was an understatement. It was more like a chalet. Large wooden beams, cobblestone structure, and tall, narrow windows on the second floor looking out over the dense trees that were sagging with snow. Despite the intense snow, everything looked immaculately shoveled and salted. The sight was stunning. Charlie gave the guy driving a generous tip and we hauled ourselves out of the cab and into the house. Once inside, I felt immediately at home. The wooden entry led to a massive great room with a stone fireplace that looked big enough for me to stand up in. A large pine mantelpiece displayed a set of deer antlers was set in the fireplace at my eye level. When I saw the large fire crackling in the grate, I had to fight the urge to sit down in one of the massive leather couches clustered around the fireplace. I could almost feel myself sinking down into the warm leather cushions. But then everyone came rushing in to see us when they realized Charlie and I had arrived. In an instant, I was swept up in a flurry of greetings and hugs. At some point, Peter introduced Yvonne, who I had never met before, and she and Peter were in a long-distance relationship. She was pretty, with thick curly black hair and elegant blue eyes. "I thought we'd go to the video store for some movies," Justin said at one point. "Keep us entertained and all that." It was a good idea, and once Charlie and I got our stuff put away, we headed out to the video store and the rental car Justin and Jill had on hand. When we arrived, we browsed up and down the aisles until we picked out a few movies. My selections were The Terminator and Aliens. By that point, it was already getting dark, so we headed back to the cabin and Jill, Yvonne, and Peter all went into the kitchen to get dinner started while the rest of us watched Back to the Future, one of the movies Justin had picked out. Dinner that night was delicious. A big spaghetti dinner complete with homemade meatballs and garlic bread. It was followed by a surprise for Justin, as we had prepared a belated birthday cake for him, complete with 20 candles. Once we had all sung to him, Justin blew out the candles in one breath and we all had a piece of cake. It was his favorite, yellow with chocolate frosting. After dinner, we all headed into the sitting room to watch another movie we had rented. Good Morning Vietnam. When it was over, Jill went into the kitchen and took out some chocolate, graham crackers, and some marshmallows from the cupboard. Then she grabbed some metal roasting sticks from a drawer somewhere so we could make s'mores over the still crackling fire. In the end, they were so good we all had at least three. Then we all sat there, lazy and content in the amber glow from the fire while the wind rattled outside on a pitch black night. Some time passed before Justin sat up, an eager grin on his face. "Well," he rubbed his hands together, "we're in a cabin in the country. It's nighttime. We have a fire and we just had s'mores. I think now it's scary story time." The mention of scary stories had given the room a slight buzz of excitement. There is nothing like scary stories by a fire at night. "It's your cabin. I guess you should go first," Peter said as the rest of us sat up straight and prepared to listen. "All right. I don't have many good stories to tell, but there was a couple that vanished out here last year, about 15 minutes from here at another cabin. No one ever found them or figured out what happened. But when they investigated the cabin they were staying in, the cops found giant rips and tears in the furniture and the curtains. This was met by complete silence. The rest of us all looked at each other, uncertain of what to say. "So, who's next?" He looked around eagerly. Jill gave him a look.
"Sweetie, you're joking with us, right?" she asked.
"No, I'm completely serious. A wealthy couple that comes out here every year vanished. My dad says no one has a clue about what happened."
"I'll tell the next story, Justin." Peter jumped up while Jill rolled her eyes. As much as Jill and Justin loved each other, they could argue like nobody's business. The rest of us took turns telling the corniest stories we could. Then we watched another movie before Jill, Justin, Yvonne, and Peter were so tired they could barely keep their eyes open.
"Hey, Trisha, guess it's just you and me now," Charlie said after they had gone to bed. "Care to join me in the hot tub?"
"Sure."
"Cool, I'll go get it ready before I change."
While my heart thudded in my chest, I managed to say something about going to put on my bathing suit before I headed upstairs to get changed. I had been instructed to bring a suit for the hot tub, but I never imagined I'd share it with Charlie alone. As I walked downstairs with the towel around myself, I was simultaneously nervous, excited, and self-conscious. What if Charlie didn't like the way I looked? What if he did? Ignoring the frantic thoughts racing inside my head. I pressed on and eventually found the door to the glass-encased patio and stepped inside. The hot tub looked spectacular. The heavy smell of chlorine hit me the instant I stepped inside the patio. The steam rose from the hot tub in thick plumes, billowing at my eye level. The dense bushes outside the glass walls were covered with beautiful blue lights, which sparkled against the glass. Despite the steam beginning to fog up the dense glass walls, there was a clear view of the backyard, the mountains, and the massive white and clear icicles hanging from the patio roof. It was like we were in our own little snow globe, watching the snow glistening and blowing just beyond the glass. Charlie wasn't there yet, so I took off my towel and decided to get comfortable. Sliding down into the hot tub felt amazing. A hot shower is nice, but sinking into a pool of hot water is beyond comparison. I leaned back, sighed with contentment, and waited. Fortunately, I didn't have to wait long, as a few minutes later, Charlie walked in and gave me another million-dollar smile. "Don't you look comfortable and in need of company?" Then he dropped the towel he had on and my jaw almost fell to the ground of the hot tub. I knew Charlie was a swimmer, but I had never seen him in a swimsuit up close before. He looked amazing, and I did everything I could not to stare. I was grateful that I could blame the water for already being bright red in my face. But even for someone who swam regularly, I thought I could feel a flicker of nerves on his part as he climbed into the hot tub. Thank God it wasn't just me. But that was nothing compared to what happened next. He didn't sit on the opposite end of the tub. No, Charlie slid over and sat right next to me. Now the heat in the room was feverish, like a sauna.
"Is this okay?" he asked with a shy smile.
"Yeah,"
I managed to say. Neither of us said anything for what seemed like a long time. But at some point, I felt myself move closer to Charlie, and he did the same right before our lips touched. It felt amazing. Slow and warm, affectionate. Everything a kiss with someone you're attracted to could be. I'm not sure how long it lasted, but it felt like an eternity. Then Charlie slowly pulled away. "I hate to stop, but if we stay any longer, we'll be dehydrated." I knew he had a point, so I let him get out before I followed. Feeling blissfully tired, I eased myself out of the hot tub and grabbed my towel to wrap around myself. As I glanced around the room, I noticed something. On one of the thick panes of glass, there was some sort of imprint. At first, I thought it was just condensation from the heat in the water against the cold outside. But then I took a closer look. Standing with my nose close against the glass, I thought it looked uncannily like a handprint. But the handprint of someone wearing gloves or something that made the fingers look unnaturally big, as the digits were all wider and thicker than a normal hand. Thinking it was nothing, I toweled off and caught up with Charlie in the hallway. His hair was adorably wet from the hot tub. We made sure to be quiet because everyone was already asleep. "Let's do that again sometime," he whispered. "If you want to, of course."
"Sounds good to me, but now we need the shower and get the bed.
I suppose we could always save water and do it together," he winked at me. "I wouldn't mind that, but the big shower is in the master bedroom, and that's currently occupied. Our rooms have tiny showers which are barely big enough for one."
"You're right. But rain check?"
"Consider yourself scheduled."
He gave me a quick kiss before he was in his room and out of sight. Feeling giddy, I hopped in my bathroom shower quickly before I went to bed and fell asleep in good time. I woke up to sunlight streaming in through the windows. I could see the sky was a bright cold blue. Time for breakfast. When I threw on my bathrobe and headed downstairs, I found everyone else had the same idea. Cereal sounded good, so I made my way towards the boxes already set out on the counter. As I grabbed the Cheerios, I saw Charlie was sitting at the kitchen table eating scrambled eggs and toast with Justin. I caught his eye and gave him a smile. Jill, who was standing near the coffee maker, saw it and gave me a knowing smirk.
"Hey, did any of you step outside last night for some reason?"
Justin asked while I was pouring the cereal into one of the white porcelain bowls set out for breakfast. We all looked at each other and shook our heads in return.
"Weird, because there's footprints in the snow leading to the cabin," he said.
"Someone probably got lost or something. It happens, especially with the snow everywhere," Jill reasoned.
"We didn't know it at the time, but footprints in the snow would be our warning. It's the biggest difference between our situation and one of those scary summer camp movies. Snow, much like blood, never lies." After breakfast, we all got ready and headed to the neighboring ski resort. I had some skiing experience, so I wasn't brand new to it like Jill, Peter, or Yvonne. There's nothing like flying through the cold air while down a hill or mountain. It's what I imagine riding a motorcycle would be like. The time went quickly, and before long, we were having lunch at the lodge's local restaurant. We all had burgers and fries while the greatest hits of the decade flowed through the restaurant's stereo system. Duran Duran, Billy Idol, Madonna, Pat Benatar. Our lunch that day was one of those moments in time I wish I could bottle. Once we were all done with lunch, we headed back to the cabin since our muscles were now sore from our time on the slopes. We limped back into the house, changed into something more comfortable than our brightly colored ski gear, and crashed in front of the TV where we watched The Terminator. But instead of sitting next to Peter like he had last night, Charlie wasted no time in grabbing a spot on the couch next to me. As he sat down, he gave my hand a gentle squeeze. From across the room, Jill gave me another knowing grin. As the movie ended, the sun was beginning to fade. The setting sun looked beautiful on the snow, which was still immaculate and unbroken in spots. Charlie, Jill, and Yvonne had nodded off during the movie and were stretching as they got off the couches. As Charlie had fallen asleep halfway through the movie, he spent the other half sleeping while pressed right up against me. I can't say I minded at all.
"Hey, I left something outside in the car," Yvonne said. "Something fell out of my purse on the way home. I'll go grab it now."
"Bundle up," I said as she huddled towards the hallway closet to get her coat. We all heard the door slam shut and went about our business. A few minutes passed, then a few more. Yvonne still wasn't back yet. "I'm gonna go check on Yvonne," Peter said after 15 minutes had passed. "Make sure everything is okay." This time we all followed him into the hallway and watched him bundle up and step outside. But when he did, there was no sight of Yvonne. Not by the car, not in the driveway, or anywhere else. The only thing we could see was the moon, which was full and seemed to shimmer in the frigid night air. So naturally, we all took a step outside as Peter walked out into the driveway and called for his girlfriend. Then, when he noticed there were footprints in the snow leading away from the garage and towards the wall of pines, he began heading that way. But Peter had only taken a few steps when his girlfriend emerged from the trees and began running towards him. When she was halfway to the cabin, she suddenly fell waist deep into the snow and Peter ran out to help her. But then I noticed there was someone else right behind her. It's ironic, really. The sight of someone in a black ski mask in literally any other setting would set you on edge. But at a ski lodge in the mountains, it would not be just appropriate but encouraging to protect yourself from the elements. The figure was wearing a black coat, black pants, and black combat-style boots to match. The only thing that didn't match was the knife. It was gleaming in the moonlight. I was vaguely aware of Yvonne telling Peter to run and get back inside the house. I also slowly became aware that Yvonne was clutching her side and was bleeding. But before Peter realized what was going on, the stranger was on top of them, knife in hand. Despite a valiant attempt by Peter to fight the stranger off, he was no match, as the stranger was well over 6 feet and must have weighed 230 pounds. But just as it looked like everything would be over in a blood-soaked mess, Peter threw a punch, and it landed right on the stranger's face and left him stunned and immobile. Yvonne and Peter immediately sprinted towards us, and we all ran into the cabin and slammed the door shut. Only when that was over did we pant and try to catch our breaths. Seeing something like that happen almost puts you in a trance. Even when the figure with the knife showed up, it didn't quite seem real. At least at first. For a moment, we all just stood there, unable to move. The only thing I can compare it to is watching a movie in a language you don't understand with no subtitles. But then the fear set in, and reality came crashing back in a split second. I tend to think of fear like alcohol. It comes in a million varieties, and no two people have the same tastes. I had been afraid before. But seeing the worst almost happen to Yvonne and Peter was my first taste of true, unadulterated fear. Moonshine-level fear. Fear that reaches out, grabs you by the throat, and rips at you. While Peter, who had experience with first aid, checked Yvonne, we all double-checked to make sure the cabin was secure.
"What do we do?" Jill whispered out. "Call the police?"
Without waiting for a response, she hustled over to the phone in the sitting room and picked it up. She held it to her ear for a second before tossing it back down.
"Dad."
There was so much in those four little letters.
"Okay."
Charlie took a deep breath. "We need to stay calm and think. He's out there, and we're in here. Unless he breaks in, he can't get to us. And if he does, we need to be able to fight back and subdue him. There are no windows big enough on the first floor, and the first floor has a deadbolt, so the only way in is through the glass walls of the patio. Barricade that door and we should be okay. Without saying a word, we ran to do just that. We shoved a bookcase, some chairs, and a table in front of the door to the patio. It was completely silent both inside and out. The adrenaline of everything began to register. The sudden strain on my body, which was already aching from skiing, was not pleasant. Fortunately, Yvonne only had the most superficial scratches, and the bleeding had already stopped. I don't get it. He should have been able to toss me aside like I was nothing. Why did that punch work? Maybe it was your ring, Yvonne suggested. It was that hand that you punched with, right? Peter held up his hand and looked at the ring on it. It was an old silver ring that his father had given him for his high school graduation. Yeah, you're right. It's always been very heavy. Probably hit a nerve or bone. Thank God for that, Yvonne muttered wearily. We all murmured our agreement. All right, Justin whispered. We're safe in here for now, but let's not kid ourselves. Whoever this is has probably been watching us since we got here. If he really wants in, he will. But I suggest we go hide in the attic and pull up the trapdoor. That's the only way in or out. Is everyone all right with that? We furiously nodded our agreement. It was a good plan. Oh, and I suggest we get ourselves some weapons, some knives or something. There are no guns here, so I'll run to the kitchen and get some knives. Charlie, go get a fireplace poker or two. Charlie did and came back what seemed like seconds later with one of the thick black antique pokers. Justin did the same with several large kitchen knives, handing one to Jill and me before he turned to Yvonne and Peter. Now we were all armed. It made me feel better. Let's go, Justin said before leading us up the wooden stairs to the second floor. We crept up in silence, which was unnerving. Each step made me nervous, as if the stranger in the ski mask was going to be right around every corner or was hiding in every shadow. After what seemed like a painfully long time, we arrived at the trap door to the attic. Justin carefully pulled it down, revealing the narrow stepladder leading up. I'll go first, just to check, he said bravely. With the knife held out in front of him, Justin slowly ascended the steps and vanished out of sight. Then there came a flash of illumination from above, one of the light bulbs dangling from the ceiling. Okay, come on up. Ladies first, Charlie nodded at the two of us. Jill went up before I did, and then it was Yvonne, with Peter and Charlie going last, bringing up the trap door as they did. Once it was firmly in place, Charlie and Justin managed to barricade it with some of the countless things stashed in the attic. It was the most packed room in the house, with boxes on top of boxes everywhere you looked. What do we do next? Jill asked. It's cold out. It's not like it's a warm summer evening and you could just stay out there all night long. If he can't get in here, he'll eventually have to go somewhere to warm up, Charlie said. Justin nodded in agreement. That's right. And if he does go through the patio glass, we barricaded the entrance. On top of that, we're up here, armed, where he can't get to us. Which is great, Charlie continued. But we can't stay up here indefinitely. You got the keys to the car? Sure do, but I'm not even considering making a run for it. I'll bet money the tires are already slashed. Fortunately, I made an appointment for us to go into town to have some fun. Since tomorrow is New Year's Eve, I even rented a car for us, a limo with a phone and a driver who will be here in the morning. I knew I loved you for a reason. Jill gave him a quick kiss. So we wait until morning. That's the plan. They're supposed to be here at 9. I was going to tell you guys tonight. We could sleep in shifts if you like. Charlie and I both have on watches. I muttered a feeble yes before fumbling around in the boxes up here and pulling out some old blankets and pillows to put on the floor. Charlie was nice enough to cuddle with me to help me relax, but it was all pointless. Every time I closed my eyes, I saw what almost happened to Yvonne and Peter, and I expected to hear the shattering of glass or the splintering of the front door at any moment. But the only thing we did hear was the occasional howl of a wolf out there in the snow. For some reason, the sound made my hair stand up on end. Not only did it sound frighteningly close, the howl sounded angry. I'd never heard a wolf sound like that before. Eventually, I gave up and sat upright so Justin and Jill could try the same thing. We spent the next 12 hours or so in a state of frazzled nerves and tense moods. I sat with my arms holding my legs, making sure to try to stretch my limbs occasionally so they wouldn't fall asleep. The others did the same. By the time morning came, we were beyond exhausted. Justin got us ready to head downstairs at exactly 8:57 a.m. After he and Charlie moved the barricade on the trap door, he turned to face us. "Let's move as a group, facing different angles so we don't have any surprises." With that, he gingerly moved the trapdoor down and one by one we walked down the stairs. I gripped my knife tightly in my hand as I did. This was even worse than the walk up the stairs. Each footstep seemed far too loud. I was expecting the stranger to leap out at us at every step we took. We made it to the front door after an eternity and waited. And waited. When it was 9 a.m. precisely, Justin gingerly slid open the peephole and looked. "It's all clear." Then we heard the most beautiful sound I had ever heard. The sound of a car pulling up to the house. Justin undid the deadbolt. "Let's get his attention and make sure we get the hell out of here," he said before he flung the door open, and we ran into the blinding white morning towards the massive black limo. I don't remember all of what happened next, but I faintly remember my heart pounding in my ears while I screamed and waved my arms. I think the other three did the same. The poor limo driver bolted out of the driver's seat and looked like we were something out of his worst nightmare. But the guy, who looked just a few years older than us, heard us out, especially when we pointed out the human-sized imprints in the snow. The driver, whose name turned out to be Steve, called the authorities for us on the phone while we waited, and waited vigilantly with our backs to the limo facing the scenery, the fear and tension somewhat lighter but still there, just as cold as the air. After that, we got into the mercifully warm limo before we heard police sirens screaming towards us. By then, we had calmed enough to explain what had happened and walked them through everything. But about halfway through Justin's explanation, one of the cops standing by the rental car called out to his colleagues.
"Hey boys, come here,"
he said before drawing his weapon. Moments later, everyone there saw a track of human footprints leading around the cabin. That was unnerving enough, but things took a turn for the downright weird when those human footprints turned into much larger footprints. Footprints that I had never seen before. And unlike the previous ones, which were clearly left by some kind of boot, looked like they were made by bare feet. Everyone there just stood there in shock, unsure of what to do or think. Eventually, someone there decided to refer to our unwanted guest as the Abominable Snowman. The next few hours passed in a haze of questions. Cops asking us questions about what happened. Doctors and nurses making sure everything was in order. Yvonne was perfectly fine. She eventually revealed that the stranger had chased her into the woods after ambushing her outside the cabin. That was where the scratches had come from. But the doctors did note they looked uncannily long and deep for a human hand to be able to leave such marks. But there was nothing they could suggest. And all the tests showed that Yvonne was fine. Eventually, we were free to go, and we headed over to the hotel rooms Justin's parents had arranged for us when he called them and explained what had happened. It was a cozy place downtown. It was late afternoon by the time we checked in and limped up to our rooms. Despite the warmth of the hotel, the cold from the past 12 hours had seeped into my bones. But we couldn't have asked for better arrangements. 4 massive bedrooms with separate bathrooms connected by a massive sitting room, which contained another bathroom. But after I put my things down and sat on the couch in one of the rooms, I felt something inside me shift and I started sobbing. Charlie immediately came over and quietly held me in his arms. I don't know how long I sobbed for, but I felt a lot better when I was finished. Next door, I thought I could hear Jill doing the same thing. We were all alive and safe. There was nothing else I could have asked for. We had just settled in and changed into our pajamas when there was a knock at the door. It was the chauffeur, Steve, who was holding an expensive-looking bottle. "I'm truly sorry about your night, but me and the cops chipped in and got this for you. Y'all have earned it." Without a word, we all buried Steve in a group hug before cracking it open with him. It was champagne. Dom Perignon. By now, we were all too wired to sleep, so we just relaxed until it was time to ring in the new year. With glasses from our minibar holding expensive booze, we toasted.
"To surviving," Jill toasted with wariness and pride.
We all sipped.
"And to thriving," Yvonne added.
We all sipped again. Somewhere in there, we had some food and watched a few movies we had retrieved from the cabin. Steve was more than happy to join us. Then we tuned in to Dick Clark to watch the end of 1989. It was a far easier wait than our time in the attic.
"Happy New Year!"
we all managed to yell out when the moment arrived. Then Charlie and I kissed. From the corner of my eye, I saw Jill and Justin do the same. Yvonne and Peter also weren't about to be left out of the festivities, especially after what had happened.
"Happy New Year, babe," Charlie whispered.
"Happy New Decade, babe," I said affectionately.
That moment is one of my favorite New Year's Eve memories. Mere hours before, it seemed like we may not make it to the next year, but we did. While everyone on TV sang Auld Lang Syne, chauffeur Steve bid us goodnight, and we all went to our respective rooms. Right before I went to sleep, Charlie wrapped his arms around me.
"Do you have a New Year's resolution?" he whispered in my ear.
"Get out of here and go somewhere warm."